Welcome to episode 7, season 2 of Beyond the Rig. And on this episode, we'll be having a conversation with Cavell Joseph St. Omer, HR practitioner. And on this episode, Cavell will be offering some great advice for a lot of us young professionals and seasoned professionals looking to switch careers, looking to enter the job market, as well as, you know, looking to join the HR profession. Without further ado, Cavell, welcome to Beyond the Rig.
Okay, thank you, Shane, and hello to all your listeners. My name is Cavell Joseph St. Omer. I am an HR practitioner by profession. Right now, I serve many hats. So in my full-time job, I am the Divisional Manager for Human Resources at the Urban Development Corporation of Trinidad and Tobago. In terms of my volunteer life, I am the president of the Human Resource Management Association of Trinidad and Tobago, as well as the president, only recently actually, the Caribbean Institute for Human Resource Management, as well as I serve on the board of the National Training Agency, EPOC Foundation, and the Arthur Lockjaw Graduate School of Business Alumni Network. In terms of my journey, Shane, well, it's a bit interesting from the perspective that I accidentally got into HR, to be honest. And I did start off pursuing a career in law. I've shared this story on numerous occasions where I attended I shared that I attended Cavill campus. And I started pursuing a career in law and economics. So my bachelor's, my first degree is a BSc in economics and law, a double major. And it was my full intention to enter into that career stream, you know, as an attorney. And it's true, working with my family business and observing and recognizing that there were gaps as it relates to how you deal with employees and dealing with the human element in the workspace, that I decided to pursue a career in HR. So after graduating with my first degree and working in the family business, I decided to pursue my master's in HR. And I actually specialized in, I did a diploma in industrial relations, and I actually enjoyed it, you know, enjoyed dealing with people issues and all of that. And then I decided, you know what, this is the career for me. So that's how that started in terms of my own journey and accidentally entering into the field of HR. What works for me and what makes me unique as a practitioner is because of that background, I have a deep understanding and appreciation for business. Starting off in a family business and working in the accounts department. I mean, you're working all sorts of things, eh? Including the workshop as well. You get an appreciation for business, and HR, our role is really to find solutions to the company's operational issues, because the operational issues impact the people in the workspace. So for me, with that background in economics, I appreciated numbers and figures. So I'm not one that fear the numbers game. The law provided me with an appreciation for the legal environment that we function in as HR practitioners, and having an understanding for the industrial relations climate all augured well for me as a practitioner and made me unique to my counterparts. So it's really just, it's all, I guess I wouldn't say accidental, I would say it's all divine, where we all, you know, the universe, yes, have its way of actually directing our path, so to speak, you know, and I'm quite happy with my career choice and what I do professionally. Yeah.
Cavell, thanks for that brief overview of your career. Really appreciate it. And I just want to say, wow, triple threat when you talk about economics, law, and HR. And, you know, just to kick off our conversation, I'd like to start, you know, in terms of the importance of career planning. I know for your journey, you mentioned you stumbled into the HR profession. And I guess, you know, one of the things that I get asked a lot, you know, is how important it is to have a career plan, especially when you start your career. And I was wondering if you could offer some advice on that.
Well, it's absolutely important to create a career plan, because it really will provide you with much needed direction and clarity regarding your future. It's also a way to motivate ourselves, you know, in terms of putting it down on paper, what we like to achieve professionally. So it's a way to keep you motivated, to utilize your strengths and to improve on your weaknesses. It's a way to help you understand the knowledge, skills, competencies that are required to fulfill your career goals. A large portion of our lives is centered and spent around a career, you know. When we look at how work and what we do and how and the role importance of that in our lives as an individual, you would see a lot of time is spent on achieving career goals. So therefore, it's important to put a plan down and to put in all the right steps that will take you, whether it's along your educational journey, whether it's along your professional journey in terms of company to company, what you set out for yourself, but it's important to put it down. And really, a career plan is essentially a list of steps, you know, in terms of what goals you set out for yourself, what you'd hope to accomplish as a professional in the future. It will help you identify what fields to pursue. It will help you develop objectives and devise a strategy for your career success. It will help you with organizing yourself and preparing yourself for the future in terms of making important decisions about, for example, what classes to take, what degree or master's program you should pursue, whether I should do a doctoral study, some form of doctoral study or not, whether I should do an internship or not, whether I should get certified or not. You know, ideally, a career plan can work as a motivating tool and help you break down that long journey that you set out for yourself in smaller steps. And it really, in terms of considering those steps in creating your career path, you really should start off firstly with, of course, learning about your potential career options. You know, so I shared with you just now that I actually wanted to pursue law initially, and then I switched, right? So that first step in creating a career plan is basically figuring out what might interest you, what career will interest you. I know a lot of young people now who now starting off, they may look at all the possibilities and be quite uncertain about what they want to do in the future. But I say start off by just appreciating your current talents, what activities you actually enjoy, you know, what sparks or that passion in your soul and, you know, makes you feel to get up each day. So if you get a sense of what you actually enjoy first, it can help, right? It may even be of interest to list some of the things that you consider in terms of potential careers, whether it's in the administrative field, advertising, advertising and promotions, entertainment, the movie industry, a standard career like in engineering, medicine, or new careers, you know. There's so much opportunities now to young professionals, and the potential to be anything you want to be is so great at this point in time, considering the era and the period in history that you're living in. I think sometimes the lack of planning works to a disadvantage when you have or you exist in a time where it's so limitless, you know, there are no limits on what you could potentially pursue as an individual. So certainly cutting things down and discovering even what job markets are growing. We live in a time where we are in a new industrial era, the fourth revolution. And instead of approaching it from a position of fear, which is what I hear a lot of, and it worries me, all this negativity around what the future of the world looks like and future of careers look like. But look at the job markets that are opening up and look at pursuing careers and new fields of studies, you know, rather than going down the track of the traditional careers that our parents and grandparents will tell us to pursue. So it's really to identify your career and match it against your skills, things that you know you're confident you could do based on your talent or your technical capabilities or what you may have learned in school or what you have a natural eye for. So, you know, some people naturally gifted with raw talent, they're good with their hands, they're good at designing stuff. So think about the soft and hard skills, because we have to consider soft skills in this time as well, too. There are some people who are good at listening, who are good negotiators, who are good at resolving conflict, right? And you could see it even in kids and how they deal with conflict amongst themselves or in sports or anything. So you have to look at the soft and the hard skills that you have and understand what sparks that passion in you. And really put a pen to paper and write it down to understand your career options and what are the potential opportunities for you as an individual. What are the qualifications required? Get a sense of even what the market conditions for those jobs are in terms of salaries and benefits that are being paid across the market. Compare that to all the possible career paths, that you could potentially have. And also, I will end by saying, have SMART goals. You know, it may sound cliche for people, especially in the project management field. Yes, SMART goals, you know. But I mean, having specific targets by saying, okay, I will get this degree from this specific university within a specific period of time, measurable in terms of, again, what goal you hope to attain at the end of it all, attainable, you know, making it realistic in terms of what you set out to accomplish for yourself and whether, you know, you could actually potentially attain it. Make it relevant, again, relevant in terms of the requirements for the market, in terms of your passion and what sparks that fire in you. And I mean, time specific. So again, you don't want to just say, I want to do this degree and not actually start, but you know, a degree might take you 3 to 5 years, depending on the program that you enroll in. So put timelines on it in terms of what you intend to achieve and keep a record. Now, for me personally, Shane, I write at the beginning, or I should say the end of each year, I plan the next year. So like in and around October, November, I will start to write down some of my goals for 2024 and start to think about what's next for me. I always have a plan, and that's part of me designing and preparing my own individual career. And maybe as I shared with you before the actual podcast started, maybe I'm a bit one-sided in terms of being so focused on career. So maybe I may not be a good example where that is concerned and work-life balance and all of that, right? But the thing is, I actually love what I do. So hence, it doesn't feel that way to me, you know? So it's what works for you as the individual, because what may work for me may not necessarily work for you. But I am a planner at heart. I could tell you what vacation I intend to take next year. I could tell you the things that I intend to pursue and by what timeline as well. And if it doesn't work out, I still stick to the plan. It will happen at some point, but I never give up on my goals. And that's the whole point and the purpose of having a career plan. It's one way to document for yourself what you hope to attain. And I will share with you before I close off on this, the benefits of career planning, because there's a benefit to organizations as well. So for the individual, it's good, but for a company, because now I could talk from the HR practitioner perspective and say there will be reasons to encourage the employees to have a career path and to have succession planning in your companies and to sit with employees, especially for those of us who have responsibility for managing human capital. So whether you're head of the department or supervisor or whatever the title might be, but once you're leading a team, you certainly want to sit with your team and formalize within the organization a way of career planning within that company. I mean, it certainly will ensure that you have a cadre of workers, a cadre of employees that, you know, that could be prepared for promotion opportunities. So it helps you with that, creating that natural succession line. It helps improve loyalty, right? Especially when employees know that their bosses or the organization is that invested in them. It certainly will encourage growth and development and learning within your organization. I often say a company doesn't benefit if you don't have people learning and growing constantly, you know, in that company. So certainly creating that learning organization is important. It discourages negative attitudes towards the leadership of the organization as well, and suppresses even activities that could be deemed insubordinate when you have a company that is so invested in their workers like that. And certainly it could create a great team environment and an environment where job satisfaction is high and all of that. So there are some benefits even to the employer by formalizing career planning within the organization, just the same as there's benefits to the individual and planning for their individual lives as well. Yeah?
Well, thanks for giving us a great overview of the importance of having a career plan and its use as a tool, right, to monitor and gauge progress as you try to develop your career. So it's a tool I only started using later on, I would say, in my career life, as I realized how important it is to have a North Star and really assess, you know, it might be every day because progress and change takes a while. So, you know, I would typically do it in every month, every 6 months, sometimes quarterly checking just to see, you know, the goals that I set career-wise, you know, how close am I? What are some of the strategies I have used? You know, what I could probably do to improve moving forward. You know, it's that iterative process of always trying to assess, analyze, improve. Really getting best out of your time as a professional developing your career. You know, I just want to emphasize to our listeners, you know, there are a lot of free tools online that you can also use to develop your career plans. And it's something I'd encourage everybody to do, especially the younger you are, the better. As you have more time on your side, I would say. And, you know, you would be caught off guard when the year is completed. You're wondering, what have you accomplished? So great stuff, Camille.
So, of course, we in the July-August period here in Trinidad and Tobago, in some other parts of the world, they say summer, right? And at Unicut, for example, we call it our Java period. And we do have a Java program where we engage young graduate, well, as it's say, young students, recently graduated, or those who are either in second or third year, opportunities for employment during this period. It's 2 months, 2 to 3 months, depending on the institution they're attending, right? And for any young person who just graduated and really looking for employment opportunities, I would say start off by firstly ensuring that your online presence is clean. I think people don't understand the power of their social media activity and the image they create by the way they project themselves, or the image or the brand, I should say, they are creating a personal brand in their online presence, right? And, you know, you may think, okay, I'm young and it doesn't really matter what I say, what I post, whether I exchange in a few hostile exchanges online, you know, that doesn't matter. But, you know, employers now are actually looking and checking in on this, right? So, I mean, start first by cleaning up your online presence if you need to. Start by growing your professional network. Now, you may think, okay, you're young, and what's the value of a professional network? In any society, a professional network has high premium. It is going to assist you with your career going forward, and it's important to understand and appreciate that that network starts even from your school days, you know? So that's why you would see a lot of parents so invested. They are invested in the outcome of SEA. And we just recently had SEA results coming out yesterday, right? And they know, their parents know the value of that network and starting that network early on in life. And that's why even from the choice of schools that you attend is so critical, that decision is critical, because future leaders are born and bred in institutions, great institutions, right? So that value of growing a professional network and doing it while in academia is so critical, because that's the future leadership pipeline right there, right? These are people who will be positioned all over in different companies, different organizations that will help you advance in some aspect of your chosen career choice, right? Then, of course, naturally, the importance of a resume and having various versions of it ready to go. So when you ask a young person sometimes today who people reach out to me on LinkedIn and all kinds of platforms, and they would say, you know, they want to know if we're hiring, if I'm looking for anyone, if I'm aware of potential opportunities, if I could pass it on to them. And you ask for a resume, and some of them, the resume is dated or it's not well done. I recently reviewed one for someone that I mentor, and it had a lot of typographical errors in it, which I had to highlight, and he needs to now update and resend to me. That's actually the homework, right? Because I said I wasn't going to correct it. And because it's learning as well too. And a resume is your way of selling yourself and saying to a potential employer, this is why you should select me for this role or for this opportunity that is now available. And having a good documented record of who you are as a person, because that's essentially what it is important, right? Create job-specific cover letters as well. So you recently graduated, you're looking for employment. Make sure and address the employer accurately. Don't create these generic cover letters, dear sir, madam, and you have one typical letter that you send to every employer, whether or not the job and the cover letter matches. You know, you just send it out. I've received cover letters where they're applying for a position, but in the letter, it has a different position listed. So you're applying to be an admin assistant, but you have administrative clerk in the title, you know, because you're not paying attention or updating your cover letter. And then there's a bit of laziness sometimes displayed when they don't even like go on the website and see who heads up HR or who's the CEO of the company and all of that, and address them in the correspondence. If in our advertisement we say, send it to the HR manager and we list the address, go and see who the HR manager is and say, dear Miss or dear Sir, and they put the person, Mr. John, Mr. Joseph, right, as the case may be, but address them in the letter. Make it unique so that distinguishes you from somebody else. Don't send up these generic things. Be open to a wide range of opportunities as well, but keep the target search around the skills, your knowledge, and your experience, even if this is your first time opportunity, but you have experience, whether it's serving on a guild or whether it's playing or being a part of a sporting team or whether it's serving in an NGO. Those are experiences you've gathered along the way. So at the end of the day, be open to opportunities that allow you to utilize those experiences and skills and the knowledge you've gained through those experiences as well. That does not say or mean that you go off applying to everything you see advertised, you know. That also will not work for you. Keep in mind, I think young professionals need to understand that their first job, it's not going to be that big, fancy salary and the dream job that they want. You know, you see young graduates coming out of university and they have all these expectations of a big corner office or whatever it might be. I don't know, fancy office and a big paycheck and all of that. But you literally have to work your way up to those things. So your first job won't be a dream job. And I think it's something that you need to appreciate and understand from the get-go. Because what you want is to gain experience. What you want is to expand that professional network that I talk about. So within that environment, that first job that you eventually get, that's where your networking is even starting, that professional network starts. So look at all the potential benefits rather than what you think you're not gaining by not having the salary that you may want or the ideal location or the ideal job title, right? You should always look for companies that are always hiring or doing a lot of hiring at this point in time. And any active job seeker will know, okay, the platforms to be searching, the normal Caribbean job, Trinidad Jobs, TT. There's so many different platforms. There's also, of course, traditional newspaper. A lot of companies don't necessarily use that anymore, but you can still check it out, right? But look for companies that you observe are hiring, right? Also check out industries that are hiring a lot of entry-level workers, you know, looking to fill entry-level positions, recognizing that you have to work your way up as well. So look for industries that you see doing that. Take note of which entry-level job titles are on the up and up as well. So you shared earlier that in terms of your sector, the energy sector, and how you've managed to switch from your original career path to another career path. So in the energy sector, you may find a lot of entry-level positions being advertised because people are moving upward and advancing themselves, so they know how to fill the lower positions. So look out and take note of that. Keep in mind, too, that there may be remote working opportunities at this point in time, and whether it's your thing or not. I mean, for me personally, I love coming into the office. I've not really worked remotely all through COVID. I worked at the office, right? But for somebody else, there might be a really great opportunity that allows you to work remotely. You should also be open. I would always say to be open to moving as well, right? We know that some employers do practice what one might consider zoning. And if my company is based in Port of Spain, for example, I may not necessarily want to hire someone who lives and resides in Point Fortune, right? So it means that if you want to work in certain industries or you have a particular target for an organization that you'd like to work at, then be prepared to consider moving if and when you can. Read up on the company, do your research, brush up on those skills that you see are in high demand. And you know what, Shane? There's so much. Remember saying this generation that's coming up in such a great time. There's so much free online programs. LinkedIn have their own little academy happening as well, where you can actually access free courses. So brush up on skills. Yes, you attended university and yes, you may have a degree, but that only gives you a foundation from a very theoretical perspective. There may be skills, soft skills that may be necessary for you to now have under your belt. So therefore, consider all the little free courses that you have and help train yourself up as well, you'd want to say, yes, you have this degree, but there are other skill sets that will make you an asset to an organization, right? And yes. Of course, that would be some of my interim advice to a young person now who is now seeking that first time job.
Before I give my example of I know a guy who's in IT and he's around age 40 and he's now trying to get into the energy sector. He has a petroleum degree and he's trying to get in, but he's too old to qualify for like your graduate training programs, but he's too young in terms of experience because he has zero experience, so he's kind of in limbo. And he already asked me for some advice in terms of, what he could do to really get at least companies to appreciate his situation and give him a shot, give him a chance to break in into that industry.
That's a good one in terms of changing a career path and factoring in age into the equation, especially where right now in terms of your current role, that person's current role, they would also be working for a particular income, and they don't necessarily want to work for less than what they're earning now, because sometimes it requires in a career path change for you to step down, to step up, right? So I would always say sometimes, you just have to take a personal inventory of where you are versus where you want to be and look at what gaps may exist. So start with that at the get-go. So look at what is required for the role that you want to pursue or the new stream that you'd want to enter in versus where you are. And try and plug in those gaps very early in terms of whether it's academics, whether it's the soft skills or hard skills, before we get to the experience part just yet. Now, when we consider the experience part, because that will be the main factor, right, in terms of determining at what level you'll enter your new career stream in. And sometimes I say, or the advice I give to people, and I have a colleague who was in a similar situation, and I said, here, find ways within your current organization to volunteer in another department or work on projects that will allow you to develop experience in the new field that you want to pursue, or find ways to get a rotation or a transfer or whatever internal program companies may have existing to facilitate persons who want to transition in terms of moving from the administrative job families into technical job families, right? So there are some companies that allow programs for you to now take a leave of absence, for lack of a better word or expression at this point in time, to just work temporarily to gain the experience, right? And not necessarily wanting to lose you as an employee to another potential employer. So they find avenues to facilitate that kind of growth and movement internally. So there may be programs in existence. If there are no programs in existence, then you find ways to volunteer, speak to a direct supervisor, and see if time could be negotiated for you to serve in another department, whether it's once for the week or whether it's a couple hours each day, however it works, right? In terms of researching the job matches that may be ideal for where you are and all of that too, because again, the main disadvantage to that person is experience more than anything. So it means finding ways, even if it's not within the organization, but even if it means volunteering in NGOs and in other organizations that may require those skill sets, or maybe in that line of business, but in a civil society way. I mean, there are different avenues when we can look at it. Find ways in which to gain the experience, because that will be a main disadvantage. In terms of having an action plan, so it comes back to what we started off talking about with having the career plan, writing it down and all of that as well. It's important to write things down. It's important for that individual to also rebrand themselves and make yourself into the role that you're trying to achieve. So a rebranding may be necessary in terms of whether it requires a different dress code or whether it requires you to speak in a particular way, whatever it may be. But you need to rebrand your image along the way using your network. So, I mean, we have to also consider why a professional network is so important. So if I could validate, or I could say to a colleague or someone who might be trying to fill a position, and it is a position within the organization, and I could see to that manager, hear what I've worked with Shane. I think Shane, although he's a bit green, I think you can bet on him. He's someone that you can mold and nurture and shape into the kind of employee that you will want. He's qualified. He has all the requirements. He meets the requirements for the job, except experience. And I think it's someone that you could develop and give the opportunity to. That is why a professional network is so important. And a professional network is also within the organization that you're working with, right? So having that network to basically recommend you for an opportunity or recommend you to advance is also critical. And then, of course, naturally, as I said, considering all the educational resources and new skills that are required, you have to make sure that you at least tick those boxes in terms of all the requirements for the new career path that you'd want to, the new journey that you want to basically start.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, he gave us a few, I guess, strategies that that someone in that position could really look to try. Definitely, and just to quickly touch on some of them, you know, a professional network, reaching out to them, and trying to get that exposure, creating a professional network, which may lead to you as an individual volunteering with NGOs, you know, to meet people within the industry you're trying to get into, and hopefully they, you know, build a relationship with them that where they could guide for you and even vouch for you. You know, I had a chat on an earlier episode where, you know, one of my guests described that concept of social currency. You know, people being in a room to vouch for you when you're not in that room. And it's one of the, I guess, the fourth level of a mentor to have, you know, who can really help you open that opportunity up for you and help you make that breakthrough. And of course, you know, the rebranding elements as well, too, is something that, you know, your brand and even your digital footprint as well, too. So probably, you know, online, watch what you say, but also try to get involved, like writing articles, I would say, you know, to create that virtual presence as well, too. So people at least know your name, and that could be also a stepping stone for you as well to kind of get into whatever field you're trying to break into. You know, somebody will give you, just have to be, you just have to have the commitment to be consistent there, I always believe, you know. But yeah, definitely some nice little strategies you gave us there for both young graduates and professionals, you know, trying to make that career switch. I myself was fortunate to do it, you know. It was kind of ad hoc, but it happened that way. But, you know, definitely something to consider and to really reflect on. And just before we close off, you know, in terms of specifically HR professionals, you know, what advice you like to give people probably thinking about a career in HR? Because, you know, HR is such a important component in companies, but I'll have to be honest, you know, a lot of people are not fans of HR. Because, you know, they have seen our policies protect the company only, and sometimes not the employee, you know, to be honest. And this is with talking people, obviously, you know, and I guess, you know, that kind of deter people in terms of, you know, really running down as a, I guess, as a profession, you know. So because I can't recall when last time somebody said, you know, I want to work in HR, you know. So just to kind of give advice, you know, in terms of people who may be considering, you know, what do you think would be some words of wisdom you'd like to share with them?
Well, I would say, firstly, HR is not really faint-hearted, you know, just based on what you just said there. You have to have a thick skin to be in HR and recognize that despite all you might do, at the end of the day, there will always be someone who is not happy or pleased with how HR functions, right? But separate and aside from that, you know, having the thick skin and not taking things too personally as well. I would always say, you know, your mindset, have that beginner's mindset, just like if you've entered the career the first time, because you don't want the company or having to deal with all the people that's using the organization to really beat up on you to the point where you yourself become an unhappy HR practitioner. So that beginner's mindset, that energy, that vibe, that excitement that you started off with, it's something that you have to find ways, creative ways to maintain it, right? You know, if you're entering HR, be prepared to be part of the solution. And by that, I mean, you have to have that mindset of problem solving. That is what I see us doing. Solving issues, solving problems, getting to know the business. So you have to understand the nature of the operations of the company that you're working with, right? So it's good to have all the theoretical background to HR, and that's great because that's the foundation. But whatever industry that you're working in, be prepared to learn and understand that industry. That's the only way you could come up with the solutions that could potentially work. So HR practitioners, and if that is the field that you want to get into, be prepared to learn more than just HR if you want to be part of the solution, right? Communication is key in HR. And you said, oh, the HR is just seen as, you know, that person who basically rules out policies and also enforce policies and procedures. But how we communicate and engage with the staff, with the entire company's population, the key asset to an organization is the people. So how we communicate and engage is critical. So anyone pursuing a career in HR should start off by actually liking people. You know, I would say if you don't like people, don't pursue it as a career.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to me, that's like a no-brainer, you know, because you are going to find yourself always having to communicate and speak and sit down, like make the time, carve out time in a day for conversations like that and for uncomfortable, difficult conversations. And you have to be okay with that as well too, right? So my day never really goes as structured or planned. I may have a plan for the day, and trust me, Shane, every day something comes up that requires me to set aside time to talk to someone, right? But I don't have a problem doing it or having difficult conversations because it's a critical part to the job. And if you love this job or you love this career, then this is a critical component. So you have to be an effective communicator. So if you want to pursue a career in HR, make sure you have excellent communication skills, that you're a good listener, active listener. So I'm talking about not just sitting down and hearing blah, 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 but listening to what people have to share with you, their experiences, their life. Some will actually share a little bit too much about themselves sometimes, especially if they trust you and they consider you someone where you can actually help and assist them with a matter, right? So be prepared for that. You're almost like the psychologist to the organization as well. So at least have an appreciation and understanding for how you can now connect with humans and how you can assist them with being a better version of themselves, helping them to evolve, helping them to, you know, master whatever skills or master their field, etc. In terms of relationships, we are in the business of relationships management on a daily basis. So yes, you have the general staff and population, but you also have the executive team and the leaders, you know, in the organization, decision makers. And you want to build the kind of relationships that will allow you to get yeses most of the time, not every time or every occasion you're going to win when you enter into a boardroom, right? So I say to my team constantly that we are in the yes business. We don't want to hear no's. So therefore, we take time to understand the people in the organization, from the board members to the CEO to the executive team, so that you can get support for the initiatives that you want to roll out. And once you understand them and understand what matters to them, you could put a bit of them into the notes that you're submitting and into your recommendation, so that they could see themselves in it and give you that yes that you're looking for. Or they could see that the numbers make sense, or they could see where there's a rate of return on this investment, or there's some kind of benefit to be derived if we were to pursue this recommendation being made by HR. So it means you have to work on managing relationships and take the time to invest in that. If, again, you want to pursue a career in HR, be a master at managing the relationships in your organization. And that starts even at the level of studying your campus life, how you deal with teamwork and group projects and group assignments, how do you value your lecturers and the institution that you're working with, etc. Right? That helps with building the relationships, and it starts from foundation. So when you see people challenged and they, you know, people come up with all sorts of excuses why they weren't successful at something, eh? And seldom look at themselves to see how they've contributed, how their style doesn't work. So I would say, know what you want, understand why you want it, make sure you actually like people, and know that you have to learn the business. So don't think because you have a degree in HR, that's it. No. Every industry you've entered in, because, I mean, you could practice HR across every single industry on the planet. So therefore, become a master of that industry too. So be prepared to learn and unlearn and relearn again. That's a fact. Every time you enter a new industry, be prepared for that.
Yeah, and I think there's some great advice there. You know, and of course, what stood out for me is that you must like people. You know, the whole managing relationships with people, and I guess tapping into the emotional intelligence aspect of things, you know, and it's always trying to manage stakeholder expectations, because within HR, you know, you have to answer to a board mostly times, you know, or management team, as well as, you know, your employees as well too, and it's a fine balance, and it's not an easy job. I would say that much. You know, it is one of the toughest jobs with that there's not much reward in, I guess, sometimes, you know, and it's something that's so critical for for really ensuring that, you know, your human resources are at optimal levels to really create, have that innovation and creation and momentum required for your organization to really transform. So, yeah, Cavell, thanks a lot for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And, you know, again, this episode was really to kind of get an HR perspective, you know, in terms of so many questions that I've been asked around HR, and thanks for sitting in and giving us a lot of little strategies that, you know, I hope all listeners can take and utilize now and even apply, you know, to see if they could work. And of course, that career plan talk that we conversation that we started with is so critical as well to, you know, trying to understand where you are, where you'd like to go going forward. So thanks so much, Cavell.
You're most welcome, and thanks for inviting me to be a part of your podcast and to share a bit of at least my perspective. You know, not everybody might agree with it, but it's my perspective on things, and to share a bit about me personally as well, too. So I appreciate it, Shane.
Cavell, as we come to the end of our show, I'd like to thank you for being a guest on Beyond the Rig. I really appreciate the insights you shared and strategies with everyone, especially our listeners. And I'd like to thank our listeners for once again tuning in this week to Beyond the Rig. Really appreciate it. Remember to like, share, subscribe, and look out for more episodes of Beyond the Rig. Until next time, stay safe.